following is a recording for Crédito Real second quarter 2020 earnings call on Thursday, July 23rd, 2020 at 11 a.m. Central Time. Good morning and welcome everyone to Crédito Real's second quarter 2020 earnings conference call. Crédito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at +52 55 52 28 9753. It is important to note that the presentation and MP3 recordings referred to this call will be available at www.creal.mx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements on Crédito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risk and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement. With us this morning from Crédito Real, we have Mr. Angel Romanos, Executive Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Carlos Ochoa, Deputy CEO. They will discuss on the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the second quarter 2020. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Romanos.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Before starting, on behalf of Crédito Real and all of its employees, I offer our sincere solidarity to all those who have been affected in some sort by COVID-19 and the health professionals who have sustained our society with their relentless commitment amid this unparalleled environment. To face the pandemic, we have proactively responded to the arising challenge, having the well-being of our associates, clients, and partners as our top priority, while adopting all required protocols to guarantee the continuity of operations. In this regard, by the one hand, our team distributors and commercial partners have jointly walked the talk by thoroughly meeting our customers' needs. Under a tailor-made approach, effort reflected in the resiliency of the collection and the delinquency metrics this quarter. On the other, we have received a positive response of our customers, as most of them have timely met their payment schedules, and those who have faced some struggle, in the great majority of the cases, have recognized all liabilities acquired and received a flexible payment proposal according to their very needs. To put the importance of these actions into greater perspective, we have kept most of active accounts before the pandemic as of quarter end. In this context, growth dynamics of the consolidated portfolio were largely dictated by the disruptions of the health contingency, with varying degrees of affection by region and by segment. Although asset quality pretty much remained still, thanks to tighter origination standards oriented only to existing clients of solid credit records or AAA profiles for new credits, in addition to the success obtained by the programs of support. All in all, the consolidated operating portfolio, supported by the addition of high-quality assets in the last 12 months, expanded by 29% during this quarter. Performance followed weakened origination dynamics across all business segments, resulting from both the effects of COVID-19 and the implementation of a selective origination strategy, as we strongly privileged the asset quality. In Mexico, the overall portfolio growth in the country stood at 26% year over year, compared to the 20% recorded in the first quarter of 2020. And delinquency stood at 1.5%, slightly eroded by 40 basis points, variation that seems quite healthy when we realize the magnitude of the challenge as the pandemic has taken toll on the economic activity of the country. Payroll portfolio increased on an annual and sequential basis by 9% and 2% respectively, where especially outstanding was the effectiveness of the enhancements performed at alternative channels, such as online platforms and call centers. As usual, origination activities were highly limited by lockdown measures. Separately, SMEs operating portfolio in Mexico increased over 100% year over year due to the development of our leasing, factoring, and traditional loans business in the last 12 months. Especially in this segment, the closeness maintained with the clients and implementation of relief programs helped to preserve adequate collection levels, albeit we are moving forward with special cautiousness as the situation evolves. Here, it is important to remind that over the quarter, we increased the participation in our business of leasing, Real Arrendamiento, taking control of the subsidiary. As a result, Crédito Real became the majority owner, and it is now bound to fully consolidate this business into a company's consolidated P&L and balance sheet. These new accounting recordings will contribute to transparency and have a nil effect at the operation, as this business line was already consolidated into the company's platform. Likewise, it is relevant to note that both SMEs and payroll started to show a regained traction in June, with a transition from a social lockdown to the reactivation of certain productive activities. As the used cars Mexico, the portfolio growth posted a 10% annual rate, but decreased by 5% in a sequential basis. This result was combined with a slightly increase of 10 basis points in delinquency, attributed to the deterioration of the unemployment rate and surging uncertainty factors that are leading consumers to delay purchase decisions. Nevertheless, at the end of June, origination of used cars in Mexico started to show signs of improvement, as public transportation has been somewhat replaced by used cars, given the contagion risks of COVID. In a nutshell, although economic weakness in Mexico is likely to extend towards the second half of the year, we certainly identify positive drivers in the USMCA agreement and the lower reference rate environment, as there are forecasts anticipating that the reference rate will converge to the 4% mark in the months to come. Turning to our international operations, used cars USA portfolio surged 61% year over year, but increased only 2% on a sequential basis, following positive origination dynamics over the last 12 months, with a non-performing loan ratio that remained solidly stable at 0.9%, reflecting the resiliency observed in collections. It is important to mention that the businesses in the United States started to show some signs of recovery since May. For instance, June posted solid figures in California, almost in the same way.
Please remain on the line. We have lost our speakers. Just one moment.
¿Les pueden marcar, por favor?
Just one moment. Please
Hello.
Remain on the line.
Doug, please.
Sorry about the inconvenience, but my line dropped. I'm on a cellular phone, and the line dropped. I'm sorry. So I'll continue where I left. It is important to mention that the businesses in the United States started to show some signs of recovery since May. For instance, June posted solid figures in California, almost in the same levels prior to those recorded before the contingency. In this sense, underlying the softer impact from the coronavirus in the United States, we find the financial aid packages approved by the Trump administration and the loose monetary policy. However, the recent rise in infections after the reopening of the economy poses a significant risk that we will be diligently monitoring to quickly execute and monetize credit guarantees, as we just did at quarter end when we raised additional cash through the auctions of recovered vehicles. Lastly, in InstaCredit, portfolio increased 24% versus the same period last year, while growth struggled on a sequential basis, dropping by 3%, as COVID-19 containment measures dragged on economic activity, mainly in Panama and Costa Rica. However, collection improvements were supported by the economic reopening by mid-May. Moreover, adjustments performed to origination standards, privileging personal loans to employees, helped to offset the deteriorated consumption environment. Now, shedding broader color on quarter's development, in June, our stock was included in the new ESG index launched by the Mexican Stock Exchange, composed of the most representative issuers that seek thoroughly to comply with relevant ESG investment factors. This important milestone reflects our lifelong commitment to adopt and promote best practices in governance and sustainability. On the financing front, during the quarter, we have made major strides towards the diversification and expansion of our funding sources. In this sense, we signed a $50 million credit line with BNP Paribas and successfully renewed two credit lines for 2.2 billion pesos due 2020, which resulted in an enhanced schedule of maturities. In April, we launched a medium-term note program for up to $1.5 billion, which will grant us access to a wide array of debt issuance options among different markets, currencies, and maturities. It is important to highlight that this program was rated BBB minus on a global scale, making it an investment-grade security by the Japan Credit Rating Agency. Shifting the discussion to guidance, for the time being, we do not count on the elements required to provide a proper forecast, given the unprecedented evolution of the pandemic, which continues impacting the world, mostly in the American continent. Although we can certainly share that collection and delinquency levels recorded this quarter have positively exceeded our expectations, as our clients have shown a high level of commitment with their acquired liabilities and shown a good response to the relief options offered. To conclude, so far we have walked the talk by executing quick actions to mitigate the COVID-19 effects in our operations, drawing from our sound financial position and flexible operating structure. Before ending my participation, I would like to highlight that this very morning we announced a strategic alliance with Grupo FAMSA, where Crédito Real will bring forth its underwriting experience and wide access to funding to support payroll origination for approximately 3.5 billion pesos per year, tapping into the extended network of Grupo FAMSA, mostly at the north of Mexico. This is a big milestone for Crédito Real, as it may almost double its payroll business in the coming years, and consequently supporting Grupo FAMSA to stabilize its funding needs for this high-quality segment of credits after the withdrawal of its banking concession, thus allowing to preserve this valuable business generation while helping us to pursue our very target of financial inclusion in Mexico. Now, I want to hand the call over to Carlos, who will discuss on further detail on our financial performance. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Angel. Good morning, and thank you all for participating in today's call. Taking up what Angel said on the leasing business, our financial statements as of this quarter already consolidate this operation. For such reason, there is an additional analysis that includes pro forma comparisons of key metrics at our earnings release. That should continue over the next quarters until a comparable basis be reached. Now, moving in my usual financial discussions of results. As of quarter end, interest income reached 2.4 billion pesos compared to the 2.9 billion pesos recorded during the same period last year, decreasing 16%. This contraction is attributed to several factors, as weaker dynamics by the enforcement of restrictions on economic activities and lockdown measures, the deployment of relief programs to our clients that roughly represented 9% of our total loan portfolio, and the consolidation of Crédito Real Arrendamiento as its main source of revenue is now recorded in the other income of from operation. In Crédito Real Arrendamiento consolidation, we began disclosing some additional figures to reflect all our operations. One of these metrics is total income that includes the revenues of all our businesses, which amounted to 2.8 billion pesos at quarter end, compared to 3 billion pesos in second Q19 pro forma. During the quarter, interest expense totaled 1.2 billion pesos, increasing 7% when compared to the 1.1 billion recorded in the same period last year. This variation was mainly attributed to FX fluctuations on the semi-annual coupons paid on certain debt securities, as well as obtention of an incremental funding as we proceed to widen liquidity for the remainder of the year to overcome the cycle. Consequently, the financial margin amounted to 1.2 billion pesos in the reporting quarter, an annual decrease of 31%, as this metric was by a lower interest income and by the change in recognizing the leasing and factoring revenues in the operating result given Crédito Real Arrendamiento's consolidation. It is worth noting that the international business contribution to the consolidated financial margin amounted this quarter 74%. Net provision for loan losses totaled 404 million pesos, up 59% when compared to the 254 million pesos recorded in the second quarter 2019, due to the additional balance that was preemptively created in the last quarter amid potential effects of the coronavirus on delinquency. In this regard, provisions for loan losses as a percentage of total loan portfolio stepped up from 2.5% in the second quarter of 19 to 3.3% this quarter. Meanwhile, administrative and promotion expenses of the quarter totaled 940 million pesos, increasing 10.3% following the recordings of depreciation expenses of Crédito Real Arrendamiento, which were partially offset by the savings generated from the divestiture of Resuelve. The postponement and cancellation of non-strategic advertising and marketing activities, and the reduction of most discretionary expenses all abroad. In the bottom line, net income amounted to 131 million pesos compared to the 492 million pesos recorded in the second Q19, following a weaker top-line performance, but remained in the positive zone without an erosion impact to our cash position that we consider a paramount metric. In this sense, return on average equity was 4.9% year-to-date, 2020, and excluding the perpetual notes, it was 6.5%. The return on average assets year-to-date, 2020, it stood at 1.3%. Regarding the capitalization ratio, accounting for our total operating portfolio, went down from 39% at the end of the second quarter, 2019, pro forma, to 34% as of June 30, 2020, still remaining within a healthy threshold and above the average level recorded by regulated financial entities. The funding cost recorded a 4 percentage point decrease from 13.2% at the second quarter 2019 to 9.1% as of June 30, 2020, primarily reflecting the downward adjustment for reference rate over the last 12 months and by better conditions arranged in our debt throughout the last 12 months. On a sequential basis, funding costs decreased by 30 basis points. In this regard, we anticipated worldwide monetary policy conditions and current economic outlook to continue fueling an additional easing, thus opening up windows of opportunity to develop new funding relations. Turning to our portfolio performance, at the quarter end, the consolidated operating loan portfolio was 51.9 billion pesos, posting a 28% annual growth, as the momentum attained in the origination during the second half of 2019 and most part of the first Q20 more than offset this quarter's soft origination dynamics. On the SMEs business, Its operating loan portfolio was 10.6 billion pesos, up over 100% when compared to the figure recorded in the same period last year, with most of the growth coming from our last 12-month expansion in Crédito Real Arrendamiento. Next in order, payroll portfolio totaled 29 billion pesos, increasing 9% year over year with a stable collection. At this point, I would like to mention that our alternative origination channels, such as call centers and online platforms, help to partially offset the affectation of field operation of our distributors. Meanwhile, used cars in Mexico portfolio increased 10% when compared to the second quarter 2019, amounting to 1.4 billion pesos by the shift in demand in used cars. In our operations in the United States, the used car portfolio reached 2.7 billion pesos and the SME portfolio totaled 1.8 billion pesos, increasing 61% and 130% respectively. Both benefited by the implementation of operational efficiencies and government stimulus measures. Lastly, Instacred loan portfolio hiked 24% year over year as of quarter end to 5.8 billion pesos with a month over month improving collection. Concluding with the P&L discussion, it is important to highlight that our consolidated non-performing loan ratio that remained virtually unchanged reflects the timely implementation of mitigation strategies to cope with a global pandemic, the extraordinary measures applied in Instacredit, as well as the increase in the charge-offs experienced during the quarter. Now, turning to our balance sheet. As of June 30, 2020, total assets increased 38% compared to that same period of 2019, amounting to 75 billion pesos, attributed to the consolidated portfolio growth and larger debt incurred over the last 12 months. As of quarter end, the company's outstanding debt totaled 53 billion pesos, up 51%, mostly explained by the effect of the peso depreciation applied to our dollar-denominated debt, the placement of our senior notes due in 2027, and the third debt issuance under our securitization program and credit facilities disclosed from March 31st, 2019 to quarter end. Building on Angel's about our new medium-term notes program, in contrast to the traditional facilities, this program and its comprised securities will provide Crédito Real with a steady funding according to its needs, while also allowing it to take advantage of opportunities from attractive interest rates in different markets and currencies. It is also relevant to underscore that the sum of strategic financing activities conducted so far, coupled with a stable collection and more limited but controlled origination, support our liquidity to navigate the effects from COVID-19. To conclude, as of quarter end, a stockholder's equity totaled 18 billion pesos, an annual increase of 12%, result of the already explained factors. With this, I conclude my remarks. And now, let me turn back the call to the operator to open the line for Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you were using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Ernesto Gabilondo of Bank of America.
Good morning, Angel and Carlos, and thanks for taking questions. My first question is if you can provide more details on this alliance with FAMSA. From what I saw in your press release, you are going to become FAMSA's financial provider for payroll loans and durable goods loans. So I just want to understand, what is FAMSA obtaining from this alliance? Are you going to share part of the financial profit with FAMSA, or are you going to provide them a fee? Also, are you going to charge FAMSA's clients the same interest rates that you have charging in the Crédito Real's products? And I remember you used to have alliances and exclusivity with retailers. If I am not mistaken, they were Hermanos Vázquez and Viana. So, clearly, you have the experience in attending this type of client, but why did you stop lending to retailers, and why are now you seeing again the opportunity to grow in this segment? Thank you.
Hello, Ernesto. How are you? It's a great opportunity for us to work with Grupo FAMSA. They originate in payroll loans almost the same as we do on a monthly basis. They have a large sales force on the streets, and we know most of the government agencies where they do their payroll disposals, and their collections are very similar to ours. On the commercial side, we are working, and yes, to another question you made, we are sharing income with them as we do with all of our payroll lenders and of our payroll distributors. On the commercial side, we are going for a fixed ROA after our cost of funds and our operating expenses and losses. We are seeking an ROA that we determined with them, and the rest of the income will go to them. But we're not taking really any risk on the portfolio or the individual customer. So for us, it's a very big opportunity. It's a very huge growth opportunity. And we believe that we made a good arrangement, a win-win arrangement with FAMSA. We will allow them to keep working on their commercial business as their license bank was taken from them, and we will be their credit providers, if you can say it like that.
And can you share with us this target ROAA that you are seeking?
I prefer not to, because then you put it on your models and you believe we're going to make more money than Banorte, and that's not true.
Okay, no, okay, understandable. Then I have a couple of questions about the quarter. The second one is on the expectations of loan growth. How has the lockdown affected your distributors to originate new loans at government institutions? Are you already originating new loans? What is the percentage of your sales force that has come back to the streets and is approaching, again, government institutions? And then my other question is in terms of non-interest expenses. As you pointed out, most of the growth was explained by the depreciation related to the consolidation of the leasing business. However, this depreciation is expected to remain through the rest of the year, right? So how should we think about the non-interest expenses line growth in the next quarters? Thank you.
Hi, Ernesto. Well, when it comes to your first question, in terms of the origination specifically in the payroll business, clearly it was softer. I mean, probably that's the softer origination that the company has experienced in a number of years. However, due to this, new arrangement that we have with FAMSA, we are convinced that whatever we lost during the first half of the year, we could offset it. In terms of origination, we could offset it since August once that we start operating with them. So I think it's going to be all in. I think it's going to be a positive year in terms of origination as for the payroll business altogether due to this new alliance. Nowadays, what we've been doing lately, as we mentioned during the call, is to rely on other channels. I mean, if the clearly, what our customers value the most is service, and the service provided by our sales force. However, due to the lockdown measures, we have to rely on the origination through other channels, mostly contact centers and online platforms and so on. They amounted for roughly 45% or something within that range during the quarter. But definitely what we are seeing is that the origination has started to normalize as the lockdown measures started to ease in some places. So we would expect it to trend upwards now on. And And then addressing your final question was related to the income?
Yes, the interest expenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the interest expense. Yes, I mean, to tell the truth, I mean, what we definitely are going to do is and it's going to be more visible now with the addition of products such as the payroll and such as the consumer lending with FAMSA, that the leasing product and the SMEs product altogether is not going to continue to gain weight within the book. So as for the interest expense line, you know, including the depreciation, I would expect it to remain rather stable due to this factor that I mentioned.
Super helpful. Thank you, Angel. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you, Ernesto.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Nicolas Priva of Bank of America.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my questions. The first one is a follow-up question on Ernesto's previous question about this alliance with Grupo FAMSA. Are you going to assume any existing liabilities of Grupo FAMSA in the financial business? Because as you know, we know that, as you said, we know all the problems that they had in the banking business, that the banking license was revoked by the regulator. And then also, I assume you are going to take the credit risk in this business, right, in the financial business of Grupo FAMSA. I'm not sure if I am misunderstood that you won't be taking credit risk in this. And also, in terms of size, am I looking at this correctly? Is this basically going to be as big as your existing payroll business in Mexico? Because you said in the press release you expect to originate 3.5 billion pesos in loans every year. And that's basic. I mean, you originated 900 million pesos in payroll loans in Mexico in the first quarter, so in the second quarter. So this is basically as big as your entire existing payroll business in Mexico. And also, if you can tell us how much of this business would be payroll loans and how much would be white goods or durable goods, and if you have seen a difference in terms of the NPLs for the existing business right now, you are assuming that business in NPLs between payroll loans and white goods for Grupo FAMSA's financial business. So that's my first question. Second question, in the press release, in your earnings report, so this is not related to Grupo FAMSA,
Nicolas, before yeah. I forget the first question, could I address it and then we move into the second
one?
Yeah.
Basically,
the attractive part about the FAMSA alliance is that the potential that we see specifically in the payroll business is enormous. I mean, we definitely believe that we could be originating something in the range of 200, 300 or something like that million per month, which, as you mentioned, could be twice as big as whatever we are originating at this point. So that's the attractive part. On top of that, you know, it's a business that we are, you know, very solid, that we are definitely an outlier in the industry and that we know very well. So that's also encouraging for the business owner. When it comes to, so basically the idea that we're having, and there's still, you know, clearly this is still a work in progress, but the idea that we have is that on the one hand, for the payroll business, we should be treating FAMSA as just another distributor, just as, you know, all the distributors we work with currently. So basically that should be what we will be doing, right? So in terms of, if you want to think in terms of risk or whatever, that shouldn't change exposure. It's just going to potentialize the growth rate for the payroll business here in Mexico. When it comes to the durable goods business, what we managed to do on the talks that we are having is to have a separated, you know, probably it's going to be in the form of a trust or in the form of an SPV, which we do not intend to consolidate in order of, you know, not assessing the additional risk or something that could change, you know, our risk metrics. So basically the arrangement that we are talking with them is something to have a portfolio with a return on assets or whatever we have on that portfolio, a return on assets predetermined for the following years. However, if you ask me, even though the commercial part of the durable goods business is also very attractive, what's more, encouraging for us is the payroll business, definitely, which we know very well. And finally, on your question and on your same question, we are not taking debt from them. Is this a completely separate business? We're just providing finances for the new customers, and the new origination is going to be financed by us. So now, if I already answered your first one, we could move to the second one.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks very much for that, Carlos. So the second one, so you show in the earnings report that your NPL ratio was unchanged quarter on quarter. And you say that the loans that you restructured because of all the debt relief measures, that you kept those, performing those following regulations. Now, you also say that if you were to exclude, to account for this impact in Instacred in Central America, then your NPL ratio would be 2.3%. Can you tell us if you did the same thing in Mexico? So what would be the NPL ratio as of June if you were to include also the infrastructure loans in Mexico in your NPLs?
No, we didn't change. I mean, that's something very important about the NPLs. I mean, even though the NPL ratio stood firmly at the 1.5% and it was the same year over year, I would focus on the cost of risk metric, which increased drastically from the 2-point-something to the 3-point. I don't have the. Let me tell you the figure. But in any case, I mean, if you think in terms of cost of risk, if you think in terms of cost of risk, the hike from the 2.5% which we had last year to the 3.3% already considers, on the one hand, the asset deterioration experienced in all our business, in the Mexican ones specifically, and on the other hand, it also involves charge-offs during the period. Even though the portfolio stood at the 1.5% NPL ratio, during that same period, we charged something around 450 to 500 million pesos. Those were the kind of the charge-offs. So basically, I would focus at this time, I would focus more on the cost of risk than on the NPL ratio per se. So we wouldn't expect major deterioration in Mexico because, as opposed to what we were required to do in Instacredit of process in terms of freezing the assets and so on, over here we did not do that, and basically we're showing whatever we're seeing in terms of asset performance. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
No, I see your point, Carlos. The only thing I'm saying is that even if I focus on the coverage of NPLs rather than just NPLs, you reported 246% as of June, but that number is inflated because you are counting restructuring loans as performing loans. So if I use the 2.3% NPL ratio that you tell us, which is adjusting only for Central America, then I get a coverage of NPLs of 160%. But I guess the missing part is that if you were to also adjust for the restructuring loans in Mexico, what would be your true NPL ratio and therefore your true coverage of NPLs? Is that more or less clear, not my question?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but that's exactly what we're disclosing, the 1.5, already taking into consideration whatever all the relief programs that we took during the quarter.
Okay. All I'm saying is in the 1.5%, you are keeping all of the restructured loans as performing loans. They are not part of the NPLs.
Correct.
Okay.
Basically, the only difference between the two quarters are the charge-offs, that they were different, right? I mean, during this quarter, as I was telling you, you're something in the range of half a billion pesos in charge-offs that helped you to keep the NPL ratio down.
Perfect. And Carlos, my last question quickly. On cash, you mentioned, so you were very active in terms of bank finance during the quarter. you mentioned that you drew down 1.4 billion pesos in credit lines from two banks, from Santander Mexico and from Japanese Bank. You also mentioned your cash collections increased in the quarter. But if I look at the cash balance, quarter on quarter, it went down to 1.1 billion pesos. I also see an increase in investment. What is then that you used some of the proceeds from those, from drawing down credit lines to also maybe invest on some securities to earn a return on that, or why did cash go down when actually you threw down all of these credit lines and cash collections improved?
No, if you look at as of the first Q20, we went from the 2.7 billion pesos, you know, when you add the cash and equivalents and the investment in securities, went from 2.7 billion. To this one over here, we are on the 2.2 billion or 2. Something billion. We're almost to the 3 billion. So it didn't decline. It increased. So your question is, how did we manage to increase those?
No. Because I was just referring at the cash line without including investment securities. So my question is the reason why, because the cash line on a standalone basis decreased, is because you use some of the proceeds from drawing down lines of credit to buy securities, basically. That was my question.
Yeah, it should be something like that. I mean, it should be something, and definitely should be something like that. But if you, okay. The way we manage cash in the company is by the addition of those two. Not considering on a single basis.
Understood. Thanks very much, Carlos.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Pedro Cardoso with Banco Financia.
Can you just please provide an overview of your relief program for the InstaCredit segments? And just another question, why we have not applied a relief program in other segments? Thank you.
Look, more than a relief program over there, it was a freeze for the portfolio in terms of for the InstaCredit business altogether. So what we believe to be a relief program is, for example, what we are doing over here in Mexico with the SMEs is very visible in the case of the SMEs. When we are rescheduling or granting grace periods or whatever we are doing, you know, in order to help our customers to cope with the situation. But in the case of InstaCredit, what happened was a freeze of the portfolio. It was frozen given the period, so basically the account didn't roll over, and that's why you see that one. But it was not necessarily a relief program.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Uktarsh Gupta with Silverdale Capital.
Hi, good morning. So I actually wanted to congratulate you for your alliance with Grupo FAMSA, and my questions are also regarding to that only. So wanted to understand the impact on your cost of risk and the yield which you're going to get from this business. So how will this alliance will impact the creditor risk number in overall? And second thing, that since you mentioned that the loans will be primarily two types, I assume, that one is payroll loans and second is consumer goods. So payroll loan, I am assuming that duration will be the similar as before. So what kind of duration we will see in the second type of segment, and additionally, how will it impact your asset liability management going forward? So, in nutshell, like the overall impact of this alliance on creditor risk financial, like at a broader level. Thank you.
Look, if I understood correctly, I mean, I would say that the main effect that this will have is going to be on the growth rates and on the origination altogether. That would be kind of, in short, the main effect that we expect to see from this alliance. It's going to lead, definitely, as we mentioned before, it's going to lead to a monthly origination that can be as high as whatever you are originating today. Now, We do not expect the risk, the company's risk, to change in this end. For starters, the portfolio that we intend to keep on our book, the portfolio that we intend to keep on our book, is going to be the payroll portfolio, which is a business, and as I mentioned, we are the outliers and we are a dominant player in that business over here in Mexico. So we wouldn't expect for the risk, at least for the payroll business altogether, to change within our book. Now, if you think about the other part of the business or the other part of this alliance, when it comes to the durable goods business, which is a business that we understand very well because that's the business where this company was built on 20-something years ago. Yes, there's definitely a difference in risk, and that's the reason underlying for not wanting us to consolidate that portfolio, but to provide funding to we're still trying to define how are we going to do this one. But that part, what we are certain at this point is that that's not going to be kept on our books, but what we are going to keep on our books is going to be the funding that we provide for that particular business or sponsor, and in which we will expect to have a determined return over assets. And basically, that's how we intend to address this new business for the company.
Okay, sure, understood. So basically, all the income which you will generate from the other part of the business will be recorded as the other income, I guess. Not in the interest income.
In this case, I mean, speaking about the relationship, the new business with Fanta definitely is going to be on the top line. It's definitely going to be both of them is going to be on the top line because as you might know, I mean, the top line what reflects is the income that we generate that comes from interest, and in both cases, both in the case of the payroll as well as in the funding that we provide for the commercial, for the retail, it's going to be in the form of an interest. So we wouldn't expect the other income from operations to change, or the one that's going to be affected is definitely going to be the first one, the first line.
So if it is the first line, then the next question which comes to my mind that I was looking at Grupo Famsa's NPL. So it is quite higher compared to Grupo Crédito Real. Like Crédito Real is 1.5%, but Grupo Famsa is 12.1%. So like, all the loans which will be originated after this alliance, due to this alliance, will it impact the NPLs anyhow, in your view?
Yeah. If you look at the consolidated NPLs for FAMSA, that includes a number of businesses that we definitely are not in. You know, probably the riskier one are personal unsecured loans, which we definitely are not going to go into that business. And as far as I believe, that was exclusive business from the bank, which they don't own already. And we are going to focus in the two lines of business where we are familiar with the risk. And those are the, as I was telling you, those are the payroll business, and the other one is going to be different, but definitely the risk is not going to be affected. Very important to mention that the credit analysis that we do with all our payroll business, the credit analysis is on our side. So we intend to follow our same credit policies that we use today.
Sure, understood. So basically the presentation which I saw for the Grupo Famsa, there are two segments. One is consumer and one is commercial. The commercial seems the least risky. And now I'm getting the durable goods is analogous to the one which is having very low NPL, like 1.3% as of 2019. Okay, understood. Okay, so that's it for my message. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Nick Dimitrov of Morgan Stanley Investment Management.
Hi there. I have a couple of questions. And the first one is related to a question that Nicholas Riva asked earlier. So, Carlos, I'm looking at the provision expense, right? And it seems like provision expense declined by about 12% quarter over quarter. If you look at it, you know, from a relative point of view, cost of risk went from 3.7 to 3.3%. I was a little bit kind of surprised. It's counterintuitive, right? Because Q2 was supposed to be the, you know, kind of the weaker quarter where we can, we have a much better view in terms of the damage from the pandemic and everything that comes with it. So how do you reconcile the decline in provision expense on a sequential basis?
It didn't decline. I mean, if you look at how much, for starters, if you look at the provision for loan losses for the second year, it amounted to 543 million pesos, right?
Right, net of recoveries.
Yeah, net of the recoveries that were 140 million pesos, total 404 million pesos. But if you compare the second quarter to the second quarter year over year, that increased roughly 59%. But however, on the sequential basis, during the first quarter, our cost of risk was already increasing. Our cost of risk, if you compare year over year in the provisions for loan losses, increased from the 3.5% of the first year to the 3.7%. So we already have an addition over there in the form of 459 million pesos. So quarter over quarter, it also increased. I mean, basically what I'm trying to say is that we started provisioning ourselves in the first year. And basically, that's the case. So it's the sum of the two, you know, what you are seeing is the combination of the two quarters, Nick.
Right. So, okay. Do you believe that based on what you just told me that then, you know, kind of the worst is behind us from the point of view that, you know, the spiking cost of risk, 3.7%, is kind of the peak?
Could you repeat that one? The 3.7. Where do you get the 3.7?
Do you believe that that's going to be kind of the peak in the cost of risk from the pandemic? From now on, it's going to continue to kind of moderate or probably remain elevated, I would argue, but it's not going to go above the 3.7 level.
Right. Yes, I would say that was in the past. I mean, definitely that was in the past, the peak. I mean, but it's going to depend on how things evolve in the next few months. I mean, for starters, I mean, I would say that one key driver, as we disclosed in the press release, how it's going to perform the InstaCredit asset altogether. What we've seen so far is that the collection-wise in asset performance altogether has improving dramatically from April to this day. So if the situations that we are seeing over here prevail, I would say that with the worst has passed, and there are going to be improvements over there in terms of asset performance that could help us to stabilize the cost of risk. So definitely that's going to be a key driver for the cost of risk altogether. And that, you know, even that is a percentage, is going to be affected as well on the origination, right? On the origination of that. So I don't know. Given the limited visibility that we currently have, we just can't speculate. But I think that the worst, I mean, if you think about the second quarter as the worst one, given that the lockdown measures in Central America, for instance, have started to ease in the past weeks, and the situation over here in Mexico, in collection wise, has remained stable. I would say that we will be seeing something in the 3.5 or 3.7, as you mentioned, as a peak.
Okay, makes sense. You mentioned InstaCredit, and I remember from previous conversations, you know, that was one area of concern, considering how vulnerable that business is. And when I look at your net income for the quarter, right, you lost a little bit of money in Mexico, which is to be expected. In the U.S., you kind of broke even, but pretty much the entire profit came from InstaCredit, and if anything, it actually increased by about 50% quarter over quarter, which is very kind of, again, counterintuitive, considering also the fact that, you know, asset quality there is probably overstated, considering the fact that, you know, a lot of it is under some kind of a relief program. So just wondering, you know, how you feel about InstaCredit based on, you know, the things, that the facts that I just mentioned.
Look, I wouldn't say, I mean, I wouldn't say that the gains that you are seeing, that the gains that we are seeing, the net income that we are seeing coming from Central America this quarter came exclusively from provisioning. Because altogether, if you ask me how much did you provision during the quarter or something, I mean, the provisioning was relatively stable. I mean, the provisioning was relatively stable except for April. I mean, if I recall correctly, April was the lowest month with the origination due to the freeze in the assets. So I would expect a major change over there, but what I would say, what I would expect implicitly, it would be, you know, the Mexican business altogether, all the lines of business here in Mexico, to start improving. And that's my view on that one. Probably, you know, once that the situation in Central America normalizes and that you have a spike in the NPLs, it's definitely going to remain, you know, on something that we've experienced in the past. I mean, if you think about the NPLs that we experienced in the past in Central America due to the Nicaraguan situation, at the max, it was something around 7.5%, if I recall correctly. So I would expect it to remain within those boundaries.
Okay. Okay. And one last question, you know, very briefly. I was looking at your origination, and I noticed that more than 50% of the new origination is loans to SMEs. And my impression was that focus will be more on payroll rather than SMEs. What is it that you're seeing in SMEs right now versus payroll? Or is it just easier to originate? The demand is more on the SME side versus payroll?
No, it was, yeah. Well, it was a combination of both, but I would say that the main explanation for the spike in the origination for the SME business came from short, you know, in terms of duration, short-lived loans, in particular from factoring. So if you think about the factoring, you know, with a duration on the average, something around 45 to 90 days,
yep.
That's when you get, you know, that's when you get the, you know, that spike in the origination. What we are seeing as customers that we are dealing with in the SMEs business, what they have is that they, most of them, they are recurrent customers. And specifically when it comes to the factoring, yes, as you can imagine, those are mostly, those behave pretty much like, you know, revolving lines or something like that. But that's the explanation for such a high origination in the SMEs business.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Take care.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for the call. I had a question regarding your consolidation of the leasing subsidiary. Can you tell us why you decided to acquire these majority stakes at this point, and what were the terms for that transaction? And regarding funds, I just wanted to confirm that you mentioned that you intend to have a similar cost of risk relative to your current operations. So in payroll, will you only lend to government employees? And on durable goods, if you will not keep the loans on your book, just the financing to FAMSA directly, am I understanding that correctly? Thank you.
Hello, Gilberto, this is Angel. Regarding your first question, we had a pre-arrangement with the with our partners on the leasing business, where we would buy at the beginning of this year, we would go up from 49% to 76%, which we own today, and we have an option to go all the way up to 100% in the next 3 to 4 years, and we plan to exercise that too when time comes. The way we acquired this was on a prearranged formula based on net income at a multiple at which the Crédito Real stock price trades, which is very low today. And that's about the question from the leasing company. Going back to the FAMSA business, on the payroll loans, we will put them as we do today with the all the other loans, and we'll have a very similar return, maybe a little bit larger, because they use a larger interest rate than we use today on an average basis. So we expect our total ROA to remain the same or grow a little bit with the FAMSA business as it grows in our portfolio and in our books. And on the consumer side, we're using an SPV or something in the middle where we have a trust where we receive the payments, and from there we will do the distributions. But we are looking to have a specific return prearranged with them, and the rest that they can get from the commercial and financial business will go to them. So we will look to a fixed ROA that is convenient to us, after our expenses and our cost of funds, and the rest will go to them. So we are also kind of distributing net income with them as we do in the payroll business. I don't know if that answers your questions.
But just on the payroll, will your target market be exclusively government employees as it is now?
We are only interested in the government payroll business of FAMSA, not on the private payroll.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Natalia Corfield with J.P. Morgan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question, and I got a little bit late to the call, so apologies if I'm repeating something that was already asked. So a couple of questions here. First of all, in terms of renegotiations, how much do the renegotiations represent of your total portfolio as of June? And also, I am interested in knowing if the renegotiations are still going on. And on this topic also, when are the loans that were renegotiated supposed to start to go back to the regular schedule? That's my first question.
Hi, Natalia. If you look at what we've done so far during the quarter in terms of relief programs or renegotiation, they just amount for roughly less than 9%. Most of these renegotiations, what they involve is a rescheduling or grace period or something in between. So basically the idea behind this is, as we mentioned earlier this year, is addressing the situation that each customer has on a particular basis, meaning that we're trying to find a suitable solution for each customer, and basically that's what we are doing. How long this will last is going to depend on the overall situation. We have limited visibility to these days, but however we've been, it has been improving. I mean, the way we address this whole situation is in terms of how many customers are granting or leaving payments on a monthly basis, and the percentage continues to be very, very high. I mean, it can be something roughly 90% of the customer base made some form of payment, either complete installments or partial installments. But what matters the most for us in these situations, and that stands for all our lines of business, is you know, to know in the form of a payment where the customer is, and we are convinced that that limits the that helps us in terms of asset performance, but that limits our exposure with these customers. So basically, that's what we are doing.
Okay, Carlos, and that this 9% that you mentioned, this doesn't include the IMFS.
Yes, it does.
It does include the IMFS?
It does not include the IMFS. It does not include the IMFS. And the reason for not including that one, the reason for not including the IMFS itself, is because at the end of the day, we received the payment. I mean, we received the payment, and the way it was booked is that we received the payment and we granted a new loan at the end of that, at the end of the outstanding loan that the customer has. So basically, that's how it works.
Okay. And just to be sure that I understood what you said, so in terms of the renegotiations, you still are getting some sort of payment there, and there is not necessarily a time when you're going to stop the renegotiations. This will be an ongoing process. Is that correct?
It looks hard to say at this point. I mean, it's going to depend on how the situation evolves. I mean, because what we definitely know, what we are well aware of, is that we cannot, I mean, we have to be empathic about the situation of the customer. If we force the situation, you know, asking for payments when, for example, in the case of coffee shops or gyms or whatever, I mean, the success rate that we would get from doing so, it would be very limited. So, I mean, we have to be flexible in that regard, and it's going to depend mostly on how the whole situation evolves in the different places where we operate.
Okay, and lastly, on collections, if we look at collections for the quarter, if we look at the number that you were expecting to get and the number that you got overall, how much were the collections down?
Look, altogether, in short, we were greatly surprised on the collection front at the end of the quarter. Especially if you consider the dynamic of the operations here in Mexico, we were greatly surprised. The payroll business altogether proved to be very resilient, and basically we collected, as you can see from the report, the amount that we regularly collect on a quarterly basis. So that was a good surprise altogether. The businesses outside Mexico, for example, in the case of Instacredit, we definitely see an improvement, and this is similar in the case of the businesses in the States. We definitely saw an improvement in the collections for the, you know, for during May and June altogether, so that was nice to have. I mean, the only collection-wise, probably we were down on the SME front, as you can see. We were down on them, just exclusively for the SME, probably we collected, I don't know, roughly something around 10% less of what we usually collect.
These including the SMEs as well, or not?
Yeah, exclusively speaking about the SMEs.
Okay. Do you have, like, for instance, the breakdown, how much was down in April and how much was down in June?
Yes, I mean, basically the way we see it is in terms of collection effectiveness, and the trend that we saw, for example, for all our lines of business, as for April, was something roughly about the 89% of the expected collection. That definitely was the worst month. The 89% of the total collections that we expected is what we received. But if you think as of June, that amount went up as 92% in June. So it was an improvement from April to June.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos.
Welcome, Natalia.
Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Carlos Rivera with Double Line.
Hi,
I had a question on asset quality, especially on the payroll loan. I mean, the NPL ratio is low, but it deteriorated quarter over quarter. I'm just wondering what is driving that. I know the pandemic is happening, but given the automatic collection, if you could provide a little bit of color there. And also, you mentioned several charges. I guess those were mostly concentrated in InstaCredit. If you can confirm that, or if there were also some charges related to payroll loans in Mexico. And I have a second question after that. Thank you.
Yeah, basically the spike that we see in terms of NPLs for the payroll business came from our business in Honduras, where we didn't, the exposure that we have in terms of payroll business in Honduras amounts roughly something around the 53% of the portfolios over there, and we did not receive payments during the quarter. So that explains the spike that explains the hike from the 1.1% in the payroll in the first Q to the 1.8% that you see. That explains by almost exclusively the payroll business in Honduras. And for the charges, I mean, the charges were stable and were in all the different lines of business. I mean, as we mentioned, some of them came from the SMEs, but mostly it was all across the board.
If I can build on this, Carlos, on what Carlos just explained, on Honduras, it was a government measure to stop payments from government agencies for the quarter. We're supposed to start getting paid in June, and I believe that the 15th of June we already got some payments and we should be starting to collect. But it was a government measure to aid people through the COVID-19 problem. But we don't see it becoming bigger or larger.
Okay. A follow-up on that. So then I would guess the payroll loan in Mexico basically stable. And then my question would be on InstaCredit, the NPL. It improved a lot quarter over quarter. I was thinking it was mostly charge-offs. But now, was there anything that was reclassified from non-performing to just taken out of the NPL because of the relief programs? Was that driving the 4.7 decline to 1.3?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. Yeah, definitely it's a combination of both charge-offs as well as the freeze in the portfolio.
Okay, and payroll loans in Mexico, then that NPL basically stable.
Yeah, that's correct, because it was embedded in this situation that we described in the Honduras, for the Honduras situation.
Okay, all right. Great. And now I would like to ask a few questions about the FAMSA partnership. I would imagine this is the origination is not an exclusive agreement given the amounts that are there. What are the conditions like to make this a long-term profitable business for you? Because, I mean, I imagine in the future there could be more competition to finance this portfolio and dilute that good ROE that you were able to lock in. And related to that also, is there any restriction in terms of how much you can originate in terms of payroll loan versus durable goods, or you are entirely able to pick and choose? And I would guess the impact of this in the overall Crédito Real in terms of funding, you are comfortable with that increase in funding requirements, especially for this year? And does that have any impact on your long-term plan for diversification? I think before you were talking about 50% in Mexico, 50% outside of Mexico, but probably that should change given that payroll loan in Mexico is a more attractive business. I don't know what you can comment on these points. Thanks.
Carlos, I will answer the first part of your question as for FAMSA. We try to work on an exclusive basis with all of our payroll distributors. This was a deal we closed really last night, and we've been working on it for a few weeks, and we got to an agreement last night. and we believe we will be FAMSA's financial arm in the near future, and we do believe this portfolio will be very significant for the overall Crédito Real portfolio, and as we said on the press release, we expect at this very beginning to at least originate 3.2 billion pesos of new loans due to the FAMSA agreement. And for the second part of your question, I let Carlos answer it for me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, our long-term view of the composition of our portfolio in the long term is clearly going to be affected by the potential of this business. Hard to see by how much, and also it's hard to see at this point, you know, given the limited visibility that we have on the growth rates for the other lines of business, in particular those outside Mexico. So our long-term view, what I'm trying to say is that our long-term view was clearly, you know, before all this crisis, and was clearly before the FAMSA deal was even on the table. So hard to say how that's going to affect. But in any case, what we are certain is that we might be compensating at the end of by at least for this year, we might compensate in this second half of the year whatever we lost in terms of origination just with this deal. So that, I mean, we are optimistic in that regard.
Okay, but would it be fair to say if you see this as a good origination, good quality, you wouldn't mind deviating from your original target and remain more concentrated in payroll loans in Mexico if the profitability is there?
We wouldn't mind. We wouldn't mind, definitely. I mean, definitely, if you look at the business altogether, if you look at the consolidated portfolio, you know, especially during the crisis, I mean, the resiliency that the payroll business has shown so far is definitely one of the strengths that the company has. So, you know, continue to grow in that line of business, you know, expanding our penetration in different markets or in different segments of that payroll business here in Mexico is definitely going to be positive altogether for the company.
Okay. And just to clarify, because I didn't hear the answer to this part, if you wanted to originate everything payroll loan and very little or not durable goods, is there any restriction in terms of the mix given by this contract, or you can do whatever you want?
I mean, as Angel mentioned, it's still work in progress. I mean, those definitions,
okay.
But definitely, I mean, it has to be something suitable for the two parties. And we are convinced that we are going to, you know, find a profitable solution for both parties. I mean, we are very, as I mentioned, we are very optimistic about this.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Angel and Carlos, for the answers.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Nick Dimitrov with Morgan Stanley Investment Management.
Hi there. Just a very quick follow-up. And I honestly, I thought it was a question that my equity colleagues are going to ask it. But I remember in the Q1 call, you said that you haven't made up your mind about dividends for the fiscal year 2019, and you're going to make that decision at the end of the first half of 2020. I was wondering whether you've made up your mind whether you're going to pay dividends out. And also, I remember you put the share buyback program on hold, but it seems like you've been buying some shares back in the open market. So I was wondering whether we're going to see more of that as well. Thank you.
So when it comes to the payout, I mean, even though the decision was already made, meaning that the payout, the 75 cents per share payout was already approved by the board and ratified by the shareholders meeting at the beginning of the year, I think the decision that still remains to be made is when is that going to happen, if that happens. I mean, we still clearly we're not in the position to answer that at this point. I mean, because it's going to depend on so many factors. But that's why that decision of the dividend payout is still on hold. And as long as for the other one, when it comes to the buyback, I mean, if you look at how much we bought, we're roughly two point five million. But if you think how cheap the stock is trading, we didn't compromise many resources into it. So it was roughly, I don't know, it was roughly $2 million or something like that, what we bought back. And we believed at the time that it was worth, you know, trying to give the stock price a support at the time and not affecting the liquidity altogether. And that's where we're standing at this point.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. With no further questions in queue, this will conclude our question and answer session. Thank you all for being on today's conference call. You may now disconnect.